All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments. Getting Doc back on the show with some of his technical insights into the precious metals markets. Now we're bringing on Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group, to give us more of an inside track on what he thinks is happening and what's driving these, in all fairness, crazy rallies in the precious metals. And Jeff, I want to start with silver. It was about a week and a half ago, maybe a little bit more than that, that we had some backwardation in silver. So the spot market was priced a couple dollars higher than the futures market. That did correct itself after a few trading days, but it all happened right around the time silver was touching $50 an ounce and breaking out from there. And quite frankly, we have seen silver just continue to skyrocket from that $50 level. We are recording this on Thursday, just the same time as we recorded with Doc, and silver is, again, over $50 an ounce at almost $53.50 right now. Jeff, give us an inside track here. What are you seeing in terms of what's driving this silver rally and breakout over $50?
The primary driver right now is speculative buying. Short-term investors and others buying silver in a expectation of short-term higher prices. And you know, the interesting thing to us is you're seeing this in gold and silver, which, you know, if you look at past spikes like this, 1979, 1980, you know, 2007, 2011, were times of economic strife. But you're also seeing it in aluminum and copper and platinum and palladium and stocks and bonds and even the U.S. dollar. So what you're looking at a situation where financial markets seem to be saying, okay, we are in a relatively strong economy, but there are cracks appearing all over the place. There are rising political risks that have not only political and social implications, but also economic and financial implications. You know, you have the U.S. government shut down. It hasn't been shut down this long since the first Trump administration. You know, he's going on record as having the two longest-term government shutdowns in the government's history. But, you know, you've got in financial markets, say, okay, things are okay now, but there are cracks appearing. And there's a tremendous amount of money. There's more money in circulation, and there's more, a larger portion of it and a larger volume of it in cash, treasuries and bank CDs, than ever before. And these guys are sort of saying, where do we put this money? And it's going a little bit here, a little bit there. So you've got a lot of money chasing a very small market. The backwardation that we saw was in London. London has some tightness in its physical supply. That's being resolved. Over the last week, you have seen about 18 million ounces of silver come off of COMEX depositories, and a larger portion of that has been air freighted to London. And if you have a memory that goes back as far as 2021, you might recall that London, we saw, you know, at that time, you saw tightness in the silver market in 2020, 2021 in the U.S. market. And London had a large amount of silver, and you saw a big shift. The arbitrage allowed people to buy in London and send it to New York. And New York inventories went from 100 to 530 million ounces, while London went down to about 770. It's about 790 million ounces now. And yeah, a large portion of that is in ETFs, but you still have like 136, 150 million ounces in unallocated silver in London. So what you're seeing is that the arb has reversed and silver is going back to London. That tells us that this trade is unwinding in the silver market. But the reality is that the silver price has risen not just because of that tightness. It's been rising in concert with all these other assets too. So clearly there's something else going on. If it was just tightness in the Indian and London silver markets, the silver price would rise and these other things wouldn't be rising. The fact that gold, platinum, palladium, copper, aluminum, stocks in general are rising tells you that there's something bigger going on that's probably more sustainable than the flip in the arb with London.
Yeah, it's a great point, Jeff. We're seeing up moves really across the board in the metals and all over the commodity sector, with the exception of oil and gas, but then also in the general equities and the cryptocurrencies. Just really, it seems to be a melt up everywhere. But just focusing on silver for one more question here. When you see a move like this, you mentioned that 2021 period where we had a nice jump. That was when you saw the birth of this silver squeeze idea. And we're getting a lot of questions coming in. Is this the silver squeeze? And this comes up every so often. And I think that anybody can realize that when a market turns, there could be shorts that are out of position and they have to cover. But the idea here being that the physical market and all these investment forces are going to squeeze the prices higher. A lot of people think that's why it didn't slow down at 50. What are your thoughts on this whole silver squeeze narrative?
I think the silver squeeze narrative is pretty much nonsensical. And you have to understand, the shorts on the COMEX are hedges of long physical positions, most of which is leased out to industrial companies. So if you're a bullion bank, you're not being squeezed because you're in your first motion, you're price neutral. You're long, your silver price has gone just this week from, $46 to $53. Your physical silver has increased in value. Your short position offsets that, but you're earning interest rates on that silver that you've leased out to industrial concerns. And those lease rates, A, have risen. They're not 200%, but they have risen. And B, they're being calculated on $53 silver instead of $46 silver. And 46 is not an accurate number because most of those leases use the end of the month lease rate and the end of the month price. And at the end of the month, silver was about $45 an ounce. So you're going from $45 to whatever the price is going to be on average this month. So the bullion banks, if they're being squeezed, they're being squeezed to record profit levels. So it's nonsensical to think that's what's going on. What's really going on in the silver market is the Indian market is very tight. The Indian market's very tight for a variety of reasons, one being that the price had actually declined over recent years to a point where so it didn't make sense to import silver so much from abroad. And people were selling silver. The price was weaker in India because people were selling silver, and they have enormous amounts of silver that was being refined into good delivery silver and kept that price down to the point where now the silver market in India is tight. India has now started buying silver from London, but you also had a lot of London metal move over to New York, as I explained earlier. So the London market had some reduced amount of inventories. Now, one of the important things to remember is that if you're trading futures or forwards or options, you don't actually need physical metal. 99 point something percent of those forwards and futures get settled for cash. And they always have, not just in a squeeze or a force majeure. They always have. That's the nature of that market. So if you think that by pulling out silver in physical silver inventories from COMEX registered stocks or London registered stocks is going to push the price up, you don't understand the silver market at all. It's just like that's not an issue there. What's an issue is that you need a price differential great enough to move silver into India, and you need a price differential, which you've got now, where it's not only makes sense to take, again, we saw 400 million ounce increase in COMEX inventories over the last couple of years. Some of that already is going back, about 5% of it's already going back to London, and probably some more until you get into an equilibrium. And that arbitrage falls, closes up to the point where the markets are pretty much in balance again.
Jeff, I'm curious, your initial comment there that this is speculative buying, fair enough. That is what we see. usually in these price spiking environments, but dive more into the COT reports. You gave us some insights there, but what are you seeing on those COT reports that is maybe out of the ordinary or something that we should follow as, I guess, we continue down this road of just higher prices?
I'll be honest with you, I really haven't even looked at the COT reports other than to see that, yes, you have seen some increase in investor purchases on the long side, but it's not out of the ordinary. And if I grab those price charts and look at them, I'm pretty sure what you're going to see is that the balance of silver COTs is not particularly out of typical range or recent range. You know, just looking at it, you know, if you look at gross long positions that investors had back in 2016, 2017, they were 650 million ounces. Today, they're about 450 million ounces. So, and if you think about it, in 2016, 2017, the price of silver was something like $12 to $15 an ounce. So the futures market isn't necessarily reflecting blind bullishness. Now, those are a little bit out of date because, again, we don't necessarily look to the COT data as a major factor in determining our short-term to medium-term price projections.
Well, Jeff, I appreciate you diving into silver with us. Let's shift over to gold, the mothership here. Over $4,200 on the futures, really almost up to $4,300, and it did tag $4,300 earlier today as we record this. What is your take on the breathless move higher in the gold price?
Well, you know, again, it's investment demand. Despite what you hear from marketing groups, central banks have actually pulled back pretty sharply on their gold purchases. They tend to be more price sensitive than individual and institutional investors. You've seen a lot of momentum traders pouring into the gold market, as with silver and platinum and palladium too, if we want to get into those later. But, you know, it's a lot of short-term momentum traders, technically oriented traders. It's funny because I was listening to some of the commentaries online from the people who pushed the silver squeeze and the world's running out of silver 4 or 5 years ago. And on Monday, they had this guy talking about, look, the refineries have gotten so much silver. Well, first off, the dealers have had so much silver sold back to them. You know, and these are medallions, 1 ounce medallions, 10 ounce bars, 100 ounce bars. These are investor sized products that the dealers have been sending it to the refiners. The refiners are backed up and they've stopped. Several major refiners have stopped buying scrap silver because they have this stuff that's 3-9 silver, needs to be upgraded to good delivery, melted down and cast into 1,000-ounce bars so that it can be delivered against COMEX or London position contracts. And so, or just used as collateral in the OTC bullion banking market. You know, bullion banks won't buy 100-ounce bars, they want 1,000-ounce good delivery bars. They don't even want 1,000-ounce non-good delivery bars. They want 1,000-ounce good delivery bars. So the refineries are backed up. The dealers are saying that most of the people coming into their stores are selling gold and silver as opposed to buying it, and they're not seeing a lot of buying stuff. Again, that speaks to my view that, you know, just over the last 5 days or so, but really over the last couple months, you've seen a lot of indications that the short-term upward pressure is probably short-lived and could come off some. Longer term, we still expect higher prices for gold and silver because politicians around the world are giving us every reason to want to have more of our wealth in gold and silver and as opposed to currencies. And that's going to continue, but you've got markets that really look overheated on a short, ultra short-term basis right now.
Oh, it's so crazy to see. Just as little anecdotal evidence as well, in Vancouver where I live, not far from my house, there's been two brand new shops that have opened up that are all about buying your gold, or I guess, and selling it back to you. But we haven't seen this since, well, 15 years ago, Jeff, when it was a very different market. Just curious, though, in terms of all the money that we are seeing come into this sector, whether it's just in gold or also all the financings we are seeing on a company front. This ties into what we've been seeing out of big institutions, U.S. institutions, banks, upgrading their targets for gold, and that whole narrative of the 60-40 portfolio that has turned to the 60-20-20 portfolio, where 20% should be in gold in these safe assets. What do you think about these calls from the big institutions getting behind the precious metals?
It's exactly what you saw. You know, I lived through 2007, 2011, and the aftermath. And I lived through 78, 79, 80, and the aftermath. And in each of those instances, this is what you saw. And that's true in gold and silver, but it's also true in other assets. You know, the head of Merrill Lynch, which went bankrupt because of its collateralized mortgage obligations positions, when he was asked about why they loaded up so much on CMOs, he said, look, we knew this was junk, but if we wanted to be in the brokerage business, we had to deal with this junk. And that's not to say that gold and silver are junk, but what it is to say is that banks and brokers will follow trends just as much as smaller investors and others. And what you're seeing right now is banks and brokers saying there's money to be made in precious metals, so let's get back into precious metals. You know, and it's nothing more than that. And, you know, I always get worried when everyone's talking about gold and when the dumb money shows up in gold. And when you find banks and brokerage houses that a year ago were poo-pooing gold, all of a sudden predicting enormous prices. And in terms of, you know, where they're predicting these prices, if you delve into what they use as a basis for these predictions, pretty much it's a chart. It's a price chart, because they don't really understand the fundamentals of supply and demand. And insofar as they even look at the supply and demand fundamentals, they look at the skewed data that comes from marketing groups that, you know, will tell you that central banks are secretly buying 20 million ounces of gold in violation of international agreements they've made over the last 20 years. And the banks and brokers are just, they're in the crowd running with the bulls just like everybody else, you know. So, I don't base my view. I pay attention to the fact that all these people are now bullish on gold, because it's a sign that this market has got a lot of uninformed money pouring into it.
Yeah, unfortunately, we see that when any market takes off. We see that in the tech sector. We see that in biotech. We see that in just any sector that's running hot. You start just attracting people buying for the sake of buying. I guess that brings up another question that we keep getting sent. What is driving these metals higher? And we hear from certain pundits that it's geopolitics. I don't know how much of that is actually baked in, but we also hear that it's the threat of the, you know, the dollar collapse and the fiat collapse. We hear that it's the BRICS nations buying it. Of course, the central bank narrative comes into it. But as we've talked about with you for a long time, Jeff, it's really at the investment side of things at the fringe that moves the price. Are there other factors that you're looking at? I mean, does the Fed rate cutting tie into this? Does geopolitics tie into this? How much of that is what's moving the price?
Yeah, you know, international politics are a major factor right now. And in fact, one of the things, and not just in international, but also national politics are another major factor. And not just U.S. national politics, but national politics around the world have become much more problematic, both socially and economically. So one of the things that we've talked about in the last year or so is that you've seen a shift, whereas in most of the time, economic and financial market concerns are the major drivers of investment demand into gold. But in the last year or two, it's been political, international and national political factors that have been the major drivers of stimulating investors to buy more gold. That's not to say that economics and financial market stability and risks aren't in there. It's just to say that the political environment around the world is much more treacherous now than it has been for decades, and it's stimulating that investment demand. That's clearly in there. Then there are shorter term trends like, you know, Fed interest rates. And we've said this for years when people, you know, people kept begging the Fed to cut interest rates for years. And we kept saying, be careful what you wish for, because the Fed will only cut interest rates when it sees serious economic problems on the horizon. And that's what's happening. You know, so now you've got, just in the last few days, as the prices of gold and silver have risen, you've seen the, on the Fed watch, CME Fed watch market, you've seen people increasing their expectations of more Fed cut interest rate cuts in 2026 and 2027 than they had been saying. And you're seeing Jerome Powell indicate that that's probably going to be the case. That tells you that the Fed, which has probably the biggest and perhaps the best economic research department in the world, the Fed looks at the world and says, we have problems and they're on our doorstep. So that factors in both on a shorter term basis, more interest rate cuts sooner, and on a longer term basis, longer term economic financial market instability and consequentially political and social issues too, fostering today. In terms of the BRICS are not buying gold. I mean, China is buying some gold. Russia's buying and selling gold to finance its war effort and its government. South Africa, Brazil have not been buying gold. They have very little gold. They need foreign exchange. So they don't really have a lot of foreign exchange to buy gold, and they don't necessarily, as central banks, see gold as something that they should be adding to their reserves. India has bought some gold in recent years too, but you know, they're not buying a lot of gold, and they're not necessarily dumping the dollar. You did see a lot of dollars and treasuries sold by the People's Bank of China over the last couple of years. Not because they're dumping the treasury, but because they've been pouring money into their economy to keep it out of recession. And most of their monetary reserves are in U.S. treasuries. So if you have 60% or more of your reserves in treasuries, and you're using a quarter of your reserves to keep your economy out of a recession, which is why you have monetary reserves, by definition, a significant portion of what you're selling to finance supporting the economy is going to be U.S. treasuries. Now, it's not that they're pissing on the treasury or the dollar. It's that they're using their monetary reserves to keep their economy afloat. And I should say, you know, if you look at the September data, Chinese imports into the U.S. are off like 27% in September from the month earlier. They were off 27% in September, but Chinese total exports worldwide rose 83%, right? Yeah, just so, yeah, they've got an economy that's got some problems, but not as bad as ours, you know? So that's there. And then, you know, it's like, are other people dumping the dollar? Well, you know, the dollar did in fact fall about 10% from 130 on a Fed traded weighted basis at the start of this year to about 120. So, you know, it's off whatever. And it's been moving sideways now since June or July. So that decline in the first half of the year seems to be past. And even at a 120, you know, it's up from 110 in 2021. You know, in 2021 during the COVID and post-COVID era. So it's still, the dollar is not collapsing and people aren't dumping the dollars on an international basis. The number of treasuries, the volume and value of treasuries held offshore are at record levels. They've been rising about 10, 14% per annum the last couple of years. people aren't dumping the dollar despite what the gold bugs want you to believe, so you buy gold. You know, it's just that's not a factor there.
Jeff, this all does, to your point, seem like speculative buying and quite simply a momentum trade. Gold led the way last year when it started breaking out and just kept on hitting all-time highs. People started taking notice. We've now seen money move down into silver and some of the other precious metals like platinum and palladium. And as much as we hear of all the uses of platinum, palladium, and silver, its industrial uses, to me, this just, again, screams of speculative buying and a momentum trade. I know it feels weird for a lot of the precious metals bugs and bulls because we haven't had this sort of momentum in well over a decade, but the market, again, to what I think it is, it's not all these underlying uses. It is simply a momentum trade into precious metals with gold that has led the way. So am I off base here, especially tying in platinum and palladium and the moves we've seen in those precious metals?
I would say you're off base. If I could use a baseball metaphor, you're off base in a way like a base runner takes the lead off the base before the pitch. You know, the vast majority of the reason why gold, silver, platinum, palladium prices are rising is speculative buying and momentum trading. And you see that because, like, if you look at platinum and palladium, rhodium prices have risen a little bit, but not that much. Why haven't they risen as much as platinum and palladium? Because rhodium doesn't have a futures market. If you look at platinum and palladium, most of the buying that you're seeing is in the futures markets and the forward markets, not in physical metal. Okay. Industrial users, you buy physical metal because they need it. Investors buy futures and forwards. So you're really seeing that. Now, there are some positive signs in fabrication demand for silver and solar power, and in some segments of the auto sector for platinum and palladium. But if you look at the biggest use of silver and gold and jewelry and decorative items, that's off in China, it's off in India, the two largest markets, and it's probably off in the rest of the world as well, partly because of the higher price, partly because people have pulled back on buying discretionary products and luxury items in expectation of more hostile economic conditions. So there is some supply and demand fundamentals that are in there that you have to pay attention to, but the vast majority of the buying has been short-term, speculative, and long-term investor demand.
Sure seems that way. But hey, that drives prices quite drastically too. And that's, I think, why we've seen these price spikes, and silver just keeps on going. Same with some of these other precious metals and gold. Let's not forget about gold. That is also just on a tear, and all the stocks are doing well. So another weekend show where we focused on precious metals, rightfully so. There's a lot to cover on the positive side, and I hope that a lot of our listeners are making money in this market, because from what I'm seeing, a lot of these stocks are going up and the metals are going up. So Jeff, thanks for taking time with us on this weekend show, and everybody, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Be sure to check out our website, kereport.com, and podcast and YouTube channel. Just search the KE Report in your podcast player to listen to all our daily editorials and so many company updates each and every week, trying to keep all of you as informed as we can. Everyone, I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.